I went to that rheumatologist. He said, I'm so sorry, you're so young. I think you have scleroderma. We had never heard of this term.
My dad was diagnosed when I was in college.
Pulmonary fibrosis has the same impact it has as lung cancer, sometimes more.
And not so many people know about it.
Welcome to Journeys Through Pulmonary Fibrosis, brought to us today by Boehringer Ingelheim. I'm Teresa Barnes, and I'm a patient advocate, and I'm your host today. I've lost five people in my family to pulmonary fibrosis, and we're here today actually at the American Thoracic Society meeting. It is in San Diego, California, and the world's top lung doctors are here to learn more and share ideas about how to solve pulmonary fibrosis and other deadly lung conditions. Thanks for joining us. Can I start with asking you to introduce yourselves? Dr. Leticia, would you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Super honored to be here. My name is Leticia Ursati. I am the Vice President of Clinical Development and Medical Affairs for Boehringer Ingelheim in the U.S.
It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Dr. Deji, why don't you tell us about you?
No, thank you. I'm Deji Adegunsoye, a pulmonologist at the University of Chicago, where I also serve as the scientific director for our interstitial lung disease and pulmonary fibrosis program. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Thank you. And Brittany, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing with us today about your experience through this journey. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you for having me. My name is Brittany. I am 32 years old. I was diagnosed with diffuse systemic scleroderma with ILD or pulmonary fibrosis in 2012.
Well, thank you for joining us today. So tell me, you were so young. Tell me about, how did you even get here? Why are you a pulmonary fibrosis patient?
Absolutely. So when I was 19, I started showing some signs where my hands and feet would go numb. So I went to my school doctor and they just diagnosed it as the Raynaud's. And then a year went by and nothing happened. And so they kind of just dismissed it and said, like, keep your extremities warm, and just sent me on my way. Then a cough came and the GERD came and the shortness of breath and my skin tightening. So I went to my school doctor, just kind of seeing what was up. And she just ran some very minimal blood work and then sent me to a rheumatologist. She kind of thought maybe it was lupus. I went to that rheumatologist. He asked me 100 questions. None of them like seemed to fit or to make any sense. He listened to my lungs. He felt my skin. He ran no further testing and said, I'm so sorry, you're so young. I think you have scleroderma. We had never heard of this term or knew anything about it. So we started asking questions. He said, do not Google it. Here's a stack of papers. Read this. And I'm going to send you to a well-known scleroderma center. My mom, having no kind of clue what this was like, okay, what's the long-term look like? What do we have to start with? And he said, there is no long-term. I'm giving her 6 months and that's pushing it. It had progressed so quickly that we were at a point where he referred me to a well-known scleroderma center to, as he put it, make me more comfortable, because we had progressed so quickly. So he sent me to that well-known scleroderma center, and that was where I met with my scleroderma specialist, who confirmed that I was diagnosed with diffuse systemic scleroderma with pulmonary fibrosis. And that was in May of 2012, so I was 20, just a couple months before my 21st birthday.
So that makes me wonder, what is the diagnosis like for patients like Brittany and patients who come to this ILD, you know, completely unaware? How easy is the diagnosis to be that's made? And what's the awareness level of, you know, patients and providers of this combination of disease?
So I think there's a profound lack of awareness when it comes to fibrotic lung diseases. Scleroderma is just one classic example of the multiple facets of pulmonary fibrosis as we see them. The challenge we often encounter is that word of mouth does not get out there about how severe the prognosis can be, of how severe the impact on quality of life can be. It's a devastating disease. We need to hear more from patients. Just like you heard from Brittany moments ago, you often don't hear that captivating side of things. But also, one thing that Brittany spoke about that really touched me is the lack of ability to fully understand and grasp the depths of what she goes through as a patient. The 15-minute encounter we have with patients as clinicians is often not enough. And patients want to unburden themselves, talk about their symptoms, the effect on their lifestyle, their offspring, family members, those little things that matter. I think in a 15-minute visit, it's just impossible to capture all of that.
So how do we do better? How do we increase that level of awareness for providers? You know, who would even consider the disease in a patient like Brittany? How do we get people to learn faster?
Maybe I can give a go on that one. And as Deji mentioned, because it's such a rare condition that, and the symptoms are respiratory symptoms that can be actually caused by the common diseases, there is a delay in actually thinking about, maybe this is not asthma, maybe this is not COPD, maybe it's something else, it's not improving. And this is where maybe pharma companies like Boehringer Ingelheim can help with education, campaigns that can really create awareness about, hey, maybe it's not only that.
I agree, Leticia. I'll tell you that I think it starts with us. Starts with me, starts with you. We all can do a better job. Patients like Brittany, who are doing a fantastic job already, family members, clinicians, caregivers, everybody, the government, community leaders. I think we can make people out there recognize the urgency to this diagnosis, the impact on quality of life. If we realize that many times pulmonary fibrosis has the same impact it has as lung cancer, sometimes more, there'll be a higher level of urgency paid to managing the disease more effectively, making the diagnosis appropriately earlier on. So we're not contending with the delay in time to diagnosis. People are realizing that there's an urgency to making this diagnosis as soon as you can and to caring for the patient more holistically. I think that's really important. And it starts with each one of us at the table and out there.
Yeah, definitely. And what about, there are patients like Brittany, but there are also other patients who come to this disease. What groups are at risk for this condition?
Yeah, so I'll love to hear from Leticia as well, but I'll start by saying that in the last few years, in the last decade or two, we've learned a lot more about the highest at-risk populations, who are those who are most vulnerable to the diagnosis, but also to the consequences of the disease. Family members of patients who have pulmonary fibrosis, we have the term familial pulmonary fibrosis. We should be mindful of them, right? Because there are genetic undertones to this disease. Environmental factors. People who are exposed to occupational gases, vapors, dust, fumes, all of those things can precipitate and propagate pulmonary fibrosis. Autoimmune causes, so autoantibodies that float in our bloodstreams, can also make us more susceptible, more vulnerable to developing pulmonary fibrosis. There's a whole myriad of things that put us at risk, and being able to recognize these early gives us a heightened awareness of who's at risk and trying to mitigate those risk factors.
And do you see in a lot of your work, you know, as you're looking at different types of patients, that are there things that families can do to educate their own families? If there are genetic risks, are there, you know, things that they can do to make sure that the next generation knows?
If there are family members affected with pulmonary fibrosis, get help, see a doctor, see a specialist.
What is the state of research in this space, and where is that going in your mind?
I'm actually very excited about the future of this landscape. The reason being that when we think about the last 10 years, in particular the last 3 years, we've seen the advent of artificial intelligence. We've probably all heard about ChatGPT and the likes of those models in our phones and all that. We've seen an explosion in multi-omics technologies, genetics and genomics, proteomics, metabolomics, and even now people are talking about the sociome. We've seen the advent of deep textual analytical algorithms for looking at HRCT scans, higher resolution CT scans. So all those things make me excited about the wave of the future. I actually think that we're about to witness a shift. And if you can think about the last 3 years, I'm incredibly excited about the next 10.
And can I just share your excitement? Because I'm also very, very excited. And a quick, quick reflection of that. If you go 10 years ago, and I have been working in the field for more than 10 years, and if you would go to a medical conference, it was very easy for me to attend the ILD sessions because there were only a few of them. Empty rooms, always the same people in the room. Now, right now, going to a conference, a big medical conference, it's really hard to choose which session I should attend.
So Brittany, tell us about, it's been what? I didn't do the math. Is it 10 years?
Or it'll be 12.
12 years mm-hmm. since your diagnosis. And you're still a child. Like in this disease, you really truly
right.
are.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, Leticia just described what the American Thoracic Society conference would have been like. And I remember that because I've actually been in the space for 20 years. My dad was diagnosed when I was in college. And so I feel like I've grown up in the science, and I used to know everyone in the space. I knew their names, I knew where they worked, and now there's so many people, it's an amazing, I'm so glad I don't know them, because that means there's so many I don't know them. What was your experience like 10 years ago as a patient, and what were the challenges then that you faced because of that?
I was very fortunate. The center that I'm at had a pulmonologist as well that was well-versed in my disease. And so my doctor just immediately sent me over to them to go and to see what he had to say. I was very fortunate to get there. And it's not only, so my doctors at my clinic, I have multiple doctors and they all talk and discuss what my care looks like and how things are going. When I was first diagnosed, we decided to go to another state to get another opinion. Not because we didn't trust my doctor or like we didn't believe what she said. We just wanted to hear it from someone else. We flew to that state. We got his opinion and he called my doctor and let her know his opinion and his findings and how the appointment went. When I have gone to the ER and I have asked, the first thing that I asked those doctors is, this is what I have. Do you have knowledge about it? Do you know what's coming? And they will tell. I have heard from them 3 times now. I will be honest, we read it in a medical book in medical school, but I don't know how to treat this. And so I've asked them every time, if I give you my doctor's number, are you willing to call her? I have her cell phone only for emergencies, but are you willing to talk to her and she can walk you through what she would do? And all of them have said yes. And they call her and she tells them and they do exactly what she asks. And I left the ER that same day or the next day. And that was amazing because I've heard from a lot of other patients that they didn't have that experience with doctors who are willing to hear from another doctor or willing to listen to another doctor or collaborate with another doctor, that they were just, I'm the doctor and this is what I want to do or this is what I'm going to do. And I don't think that I could be where I am at without all of them collaborating all the time.
So it's baseball season. It makes me think about the Padres across the street that, you know, being, it's a team effort, the family and the players, which are the patients, mm-hmm. and then the coaches and the you know, support teams are the ones that really come together to change the disease for you, right? So Dr. Leticia, you mentioned your clinical research efforts. Can you tell us more about that? And are there challenges that you're facing in that?
Yes, thank you for the question. And I want to bring up one big challenge that we have, which is recruitment for clinical studies. These are rare conditions, pulmonary fibrosis, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, but other forms of pulmonary fibrosis as well. And how do we get, and time is of essence. We want to have trials, studies that recruit fast enough so we can find solutions that come fast enough for the needs of the patients. But I want to hear your perspectives on that too, in terms of clinical trial recruitment. And Brittany, maybe I start with you. What are your thoughts? How would you suggest that we conduct those studies, and what is your view on that?
I think clinical trials are great, and I will note that my doctor does let us know of all the clinical trials that are happening. Also, my clinic in itself, every time there is a new clinical trial that one of our doctors is involved with, they send out the information. So our clinic is very good at letting all of the patients know kind of what's happening.
Well, I think we can do a better job of enhancing diversity in clinical trials. I think that it's a multifaceted issue, actually. When you think about diversity, you think about diversity in terms of race and ethnicity, in terms of sex and gender, in terms of neighborhood diversity, like rural and urban centers, in terms of geographic locations, right? And that's why I really like the fact that a lot of the clinical trials we've had to date in ILD, pulmonary fibrosis, have been at multiple scores of centers across the world, not just in the US alone, Europe, sometimes the Middle East, and Latin America. So I think I really like that fact. One thing that stands out is there isn't a one-size-fits-all for pulmonary fibrosis. The disease affects different populations differently. We know that there's compelling evidence recently that shows that Black populations are four times at risk of connective tissue disease compared to their white populations, right? Hispanic populations are more at risk for what we call fibrotic hypersensitivity pneumonitis compared to others. And so being able to recruit from these populations is incredibly important for the external validity of any finding you get from a clinical trial. And so I think we need to prioritize, like Brittany said, education of the population to know how important these clinical trials are. I also think that we need to place a lot of premium on recruitment and retention. So recruitment from the perspective of going to patients where it matters to them, like not waiting for them to come to us in tertiary ivory centers of learning, right? You can go to them where it matters to them. So recruitment at barbershops, at houses of worship, in the community, taking the message to them where they live. If you're going to wait for patients to come to you, you'll miss out on the broader population that are affected by this. I think it's important to do that. I also think that when patients get enrolled in studies, if they truly understand the need to stay in a study, the drop-offs will drop. We'll have a much lower dropout rate than what we're seeing currently. I think that's also very important. So there's a lot more to be done. We can achieve a lot more. Finally, I was going to touch on the fact that we've entered into a dispensation where it's not just IPF anymore. It's a whole lot of pulmonary fibrosis phenotypes. We've got connective tissue disease, we've got HP, we've got even unclassifiable pulmonary fibrosis. We don't know how it acts, the disease behavior or the patterns. It doesn't fit into a box. And so being able to recruit patients from all the different phenotypes, as long as they have that final common pathway that we call pulmonary fibrosis, there should be a channel to get them into a clinical trial. Because the disease matters to them, it should matter to us as well.
Absolutely. Dr. Deji, what do you see? What's your hope for the future for the disease?
I was just going to hop back to something that Brittany said, which I found very compelling. As lung doctors, we often have our blinders on and focus on the lungs. And when we hear the term pulmonary fibrosis, in of itself, it's not just about the lungs. It's a much more systemic thing. And being able to visualize a patient as a human being, not just the fibrosis in the lungs, is incredibly important. In the last 3 years, the notion of people with progressive pulmonary fibrosis that spans across multiple subtypes has really risen to the fore. So now we have a lot more recognition of disease that progresses, not just IPF or idiopathic forms, but also connective tissue disease forms, the ones from environmental causes and all that. So I think we need to recognize that more and more and more. When there are telltale signs that are outside of the lung, we should pay attention because they are part of the patient's journey. My hope is that someday we can prevent all of this, everything. And why do I say that? I think while it may be aspirational, I think it's doable.
Dr. Leticia, what is your hope for the future?
So my hope for the future, working for Boehringer Ingelheim for the past 13 years and knowing the commitment of this company to the field. So what I would like to leave this video cast with is the point that pulmonary fibrosis is a condition that, when it's progressive, it really impacts patients, caregivers, and the entire ecosystem around them. And not so many people know about it. So it's so important that more people hear and see and watch us talking about pulmonary fibrosis.
Brittany, do you want to share? Is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners and viewers before we go? What is your hope for the future for this disease and for you and other patients like you?
So my hope just for the future is to get this diagnosed as quickly as we can, but also just to get the word out enough that when a diagnosis is made, people will know. They know what it is. They've heard about it. They've seen it. Even if it was just on a TV show or on the radio or in a book, the hope is really just to get the word out there as much as possible and to continue the research.
So this is all the time we have today. Thank you guys so much for joining us and our guests here. And if you've enjoyed today's podcast, you can listen to previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to hello@Boehringer-Ingelheim.com. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.